relationships with brokers, I find it's very important to just be clear with them what it is exactly that you're looking for. What is it that you're looking to buy? The few brokers that I work with, because they know what I exactly, like, this is what he's looking for, they just keep on sending the deals to me whenever it comes on the market, because like they know exactly what it is that I'm looking for. Whereas like if I'm just be all over the place, like, oh, maybe this, maybe that, what are you targeting? And brokers are just going to be clear and understand what it is that you're looking for and send you that kind of deal.
This is Eat, Sleep, Invest, the marketing podcast for real estate investors to get more deals. Hey, welcome back everyone to another episode of Eat, Sleep, and Invest. I'm your host, Brian Driscoll. I'm here with Stephen Honing. What's going on, man?
Hi, Brian. How are you? It's a pleasure being here today.
So, Stephen, how about this? Why don't you give everybody a little background on how you got into this space and what all you do?
Sure. So I got started about 5 years ago. I guess that was like, I would say a half year before COVID hit. That's when I did my first deal, my very first deal. How did I even get into it? I guess I should really give it a lot of credit to a good close friend of mine that he was already involved in the business like for a few years before me, and he kind of gave me a lot of his time, answered all my questions, and just tried to kind of give me an in and help me understand the ins and outs of the business. In fact, we ended up doing my very first deal I did with him, and yeah, I guess as you say, the rest is history.
That's cool. So what'd you do? Did you have a buddy that's like, he was already in the space and he was kind of mentoring you? What'd you guys do? JV the first deal, or how'd that work?
We bought that deal all cash. He bought a little of the money and I bought a little of the money. And we ended up, it was a fix and flip that we bought. It was, I believe, a bank owned property that we ended up like somehow like getting our hands on it. I found the deal and I approached him like, hey, I think this is a good deal. And he's like, yeah, sure. Sounds good. And we just jumped into it. Hired a contractor, did some work. It wasn't that long. It was a matter of 2-3 months, and the property was ready to be listed. What happened then, we were going to list the property on the market March 12th of 2020.
Perfect timing.
Yeah, perfect timing. Unnecessary to fill anyone in on this. And we were petrified, like, okay, what in the world is going to happen now? Like, no one is buying houses. No one even cares about buying houses now. The good thing was that we didn't have a loan on that property. We bought it all cash. It was like, okay, in the worst case, whatever it is, we'll just be sitting here stuck with this. Maybe we'll put in a tenant if we can't sell it. But fast forward, it was a matter of a month or two, and we ended up selling it, of course, for quite a lot more than what we originally expected to sell it for, because a lot of people, this wasn't in New Jersey. So a lot of people at that time started moving out from the city. They wanted a little more grounds and grass and front and the back because everyone's just sitting home. And yeah, it ended up being a good deal, better than anticipated. And from there, we're just like, I guess just hanging out in the area, being there almost every day, overseeing the project. So we kind of got to know the neighborhood and like started reaching out and talking to people. And we got to know another person. Hey, they're also looking to sell, and they're looking to sell, and like some referrals, and slowly we got into it.
The guy you partnered up with, how well did you know?
We're very close friends.
Okay, so you guys were friends, so that's cool.
Yeah.
And you were able to lean on him, so that's interesting. And the funny thing is, too, like even everybody listening, too, if you find a deal, a lot of people will partner up with you and help you walk through the deal. Finding the deal is the hard part.
Exactly. That's very true. I do find, seeing not only this close friend of mine, but when I don't know, for whatever reason, I had a passion for real estate, and I always wanted to learn and know more about it. And I was reaching out, I was like just trying to have like small conversation with people that I know that are like in this business. And I must say, people were very, very, very helpful, and people were like nice enough, like to give me time and like, you know, try to give me a little guidance. Like I remember, like I would look into a deal and I literally didn't know how to even underwrite a deal. So I would just like send it to a relative, like, hey, what do you think of this? And the deal really didn't make sense, but he just was kind enough like to just put it all together in a beautiful spreadsheet and send it back to me, and like kind of have me realize myself why, like you're like, hey, like, do you think that this makes sense? Like, what do you think? So I feel like it's really beautiful. And for anyone looking to get started, like try to find someone, like whether it's a friend or someone that's nice and kind enough to give you a little time and help you get started. But remember, be very appreciative, because like sometimes you like, especially if you're getting started and like you don't know anything about it, these people are very nice to give you time and try to help you to understand. So it's kind of, if you want them to give you time, like make sure to really appreciate it.
That's a good point too. And one way to appreciate it, like you split the deal with him. So it made it worth his time because maybe one or two that came just weren't deals, but then you brought one that was a good deal and you were able to take it the whole way through with him too. So it kind of repays him back
for sure. Yeah. No. And at this point we own a beautiful number of units together. So obviously he invested in something.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
What made you want to get into real estate?
That's a good question. Honestly, I don't think I really have an explanation to that. And it could be that it wasn't a real, I mean, a lot of people think, probably like anyone that's not in this business tends to think that this is just like a cash flowing business where you could just sit and relax and like leisure and not have to like not do anything. And just the money like just flows in. Like that's for some reason people have like that perception of like real estate, which is really not true, especially for someone that's getting like just getting started, right? It's a business like any other and you really have to work hard. Build relationships, make connections, and get the good deals. It could be I was living in that illusion that like, yeah, I'll do real estate and I'll just like, I won't have to work too hard.
It's all like rainbows and sunshine.
Yeah, and study and this and that. Like it was probably like, yeah, like a big part, it was probably that. I don't have a real estate background, although my father was a real estate broker for quite a few years before the crash in 08. He was doing commercial. And I'm doing residential, really. So like,
yeah, you know what? That brings up a good point, though. So before you were doing real estate, what were you doing?
I started doing real estate, like, really, I didn't have a job before that. I didn't really do anything. I was involved in music, like to some degree. It wasn't something that I was doing for a living. It was just a passion. I grew up in a musical family and it's something that just came my way and I enjoyed doing it. So I was writing some music and involved in some production. And I really enjoyed it, but I, at some point, like, I realized that, like, okay, I'm obviously not going to be making a living from this, especially given that I'm a big perfectionist and I wanted everything to be perfect plus. So it was like, hey, either you kind of, compromise and produce music that are not 100% solid or whatever word you want to use, or you just decide to make a living doing something else because, like, this was just taking up too much time. But then what's interesting is I feel like I learned to, I enjoyed music, not only music, kind of, I enjoy any form of art. I always enjoyed marketing and stuff like that. I remember I was a little kid and I enjoyed like sitting by the computer and designing my own imaginary ads for some company and trying to come up with interesting line and a catchy, some writing and stuff like that. So I always enjoyed marketing. So it's interesting that I kind of learned to apply that skill in the real estate space because people, I think it's not only, yeah, it's about negotiating. It's about the numbers and learning how to underwrite a deal, but it takes like there are so many different components in any successful business. So you kind of look into yourself and try to tune into that. Like what is it that I enjoy and what are really my strengths? If you kind of learn to apply that to any business.
Yeah, it works out. So let me ask you this now. So in your real estate business, you started this like 5.5 years ago. What do you guys do now? Like, is it a lot of fix and flip rentals? Like explain like what your business day portfolio and like what you do is.
Yeah. So honestly, almost no fix and flips at this point. First two deals that I did were fix and flips. And interesting enough, I forgot to mention, that's also important. My very first deal, the one that I mentioned before, was actually my second deal. The first one that worked out. A few months before that, I bought a two family, also a bank owned property. And I bought that one myself and I hired a contractor. I didn't know a thing. I hired a contractor to do all the work and all that. And apparently he wasn't very experienced himself either. And it took him like way too long to obtain the permits. And in the meantime, I took a hard money loan on that one and I was paying interest every month and I was literally losing money on it. And it was like, yeah, we're getting the permits tomorrow, next week, another month. And it just very nice, good guy, but he just like, I guess wasn't experienced enough. So I ended up selling that one. Also when COVID hit, I'm like, hey, what in the world am I doing with this? Like at that point, I think they wouldn't even allow you to continue doing construction. So even if I would get the permits, I was just doomed. And my loan was already running out. I almost hit 12 months and I had to pay the loan back. So I just quickly put it on the market and I sold it at a loss of $15,000. The good thing is that during that same time, I already was doing my second deal and I kind of made money on that one. So that kind of gave me the courage to like not to fall out. I was already seeing success like with another project.
Yeah, and I give you credit there too, because I think a lot of people, they want to get into real estate. Number one, they don't take action. It's like you keep studying versus like you went to school hard knocks there. You bought the property, realized how the contractor is very important. And now you learn, you probably won't make that mistake again.
Exactly. I learned so much. And I remember my friend telling me after the first deal that we actually made something on it. like, look, we didn't make as much as we like would like to make on it. It was like, look, people pay thousands of dollars and they go to school, like for college and stuff like that. We just learned so much like doing this project, and we even made whatever something. So that's beautiful. And it's really true.
That's cool. So what do you do now? What's your model? Like, what do you guys do it all the time?
At some point, like, so again, I started, I was doing that single family home, the two family, I was doing fix and flips. Then right after, I got somehow got involved after COVID, I got involved in wholesaling. I made a few good relationships with banks and some other wholesalers. And I was getting a nice, I had a beautiful flow of good deals that, you know, still had room for me to put up a fee on top of that. I was kind of scared to buy myself like right after COVID, like people were still living in the, you know, who knows where it's going and the rates are going up or going down and this and that. So for a full year, I was only wholesaling. Then my second year, I bought my first rental property, which is a 7-unit building. And that was a big step for me also. And right after I realized, okay, so let me just kind of separate the two. Kind of there's a wholesaling business here. And then there's another entity that's kind of buying, holding, and managing. So that's the way I set myself up. And I'm continuing to do both. On the one hand, I'm wholesaling. That's Heyday Home Buyers. I have my website. And I, of course, buy leads through Motivated Leads. And I'm seeing a lot of success through them, getting real quality leads. And then separately, I have my holdings and management company, Klevman Property Group. And we, for the most part, commercial properties, residential, multifamily.
Are you taking the wholesaling, basically taking the profits from that and rolling it into the buy and hold properties, building wealth that way?
I guess so. Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Now, when you buy the rental properties, are you doing the BRRRR method or what are you doing there?
Yeah, add value. Like for the most part, I buy, that's very hard to find nowadays, but I when I started, I was like strictly looking for vacant properties, which is obviously, it's almost impossible to find. But even if they're not vacant, I always try to get like either one or two units vacant. So there's like what to get started with. And I start moving around and like kind of renovating one unit and offering one of the existing tenants, hey, look at this beautiful unit. Wouldn't you want to move in there and pay us a little bit more? So we could start renovating the other. But yeah, pretty much just adding value to the existing building, fixing it up. And then we have a nice cash flow doing that.
That's pretty cool too. Because especially with commercial and like multis that are over 4 units, if you make the building worth more, like they're not valued based on comps most of the time. It's exactly. More based on the income. So you can force the value up
exactly
by fixing it right and then burn it that way.
Exactly. That's why I only like I focus like on commercial only, because like I feel like with the 3-4 unit, there's only so much you could do to add value, because like the bank is again going to be looking at the comps, like, hey, how much did this sell for? How much did that one sell for? Whereas with whatever, like commercial 5 units plus, as long as I could raise the rents and add value to the property, and I'll show the bank, hey, look at this. Like, look how beautifully this is cash flowing now. It's just so much easier to work things around.
Yeah. Now, I know on like singles, I can usually turn around a property in like 90 days. I buy it cash and then I refi out of it, usually like 90 to 120 days. Mm-hmm. Commercial takes longer though, right?
Yeah. It's usually a game of 12 months, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you got to be able to.
It's really depending what size of the deal. Yeah. If it's just 6 units, it's sometimes easier because look, there are only 6 units to turn around. But if you're talking about a 20-unit building, obviously that takes a little more time to bring up the rent roll, and there are just more people to work with. So yeah, depending on the size of the deal, but of course it takes more time. Yeah.
How many units are you guys up to?
A couple of hundred.
Yeah, so you're not messing around. That's a lot of units in 5 years.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. Are you talking, do you do some in commercial too, like straight commercial, like warehouses, stuff like that? Or are you just talking like big multis as commercial?
So right now, like just big multis. I am looking into some retail space and stuff like that. I haven't like done warehouse like at all. Not for a specific reason, not because I don't believe in it or anything like that. The opposite is actually true. It's just that I kind of found my comfort zone and this is what I know. So now automatically people are just bringing me the deals that like, let's say a broker that I bought through him, a couple of 6-unit buildings, like anytime a six unit building comes his way, like without thinking twice, he'll shoot it my way right away. He knows that I'm for sure going to buy this, obviously, if it makes sense. So kind of in order to expand, I really need the time for that. And like, yeah, I need to be very motivated. I guess maybe now with the market being a little harder and like it's a little harder to find good deals, some maybe I could say like I have a little bit of a motivation to kind of open up the different, to kind of expand my buy box. But I guess I'm still not very motivated because I'm still getting deals and I'm still closing multifamilies. So Yeah, but of course, I don't know if anyone listening to this, yes, I am open to buying retail space and warehouse as long as the numbers make sense. And for sure, I'll give the time. If it sounds like a good deal, I'll give the time to really dig into it and of course, make it happen.
How do you get the brokers? Like, how do you build that relationship so that they actually send you deals over?
Because at first, I could go back to marketing like a little bit. Like, it has to do with marketing a little bit also. But then I guess you could say I'm a relationship type of guy. I enjoy speaking to people. I enjoy one-on-one conversations. And I feel like I really, with the few brokers that I've been working with over the last few years, like, we really developed a real relationship. Like, we're really close and we have tremendous trust in each other. We're really loyal, me to him and him to, like, back to me. Like, it's kind of a relationship that, like, I was able to develop with them. Then again, like, when it comes, I feel like oftentimes I'm able to submit an offer for a property that's even, let's say, on the market, and not necessarily am I going to win the bid because I put in like the highest offer, but it's also a lot about how you present it. If you give a professional impression and you make sure to present it right, often I find that that really wins.
Yeah, you have a couple of good points there too, because building a relationship with brokers, if they know they send you a deal and you say you're going to buy it, you actually do, is a big thing. Now, when you're talking about presenting offers and making sure it looks professional, like, do you have any examples?
First, even just sending an LOI, you could send an LOI through the broker, which is just a, let's say, like, talking about a property that's on the MLS and you work through a broker, right? You could submit an LOI through the standard broker's template or form. And then you just look like any other, right? But if you kind of send a beautiful package to the listing agent or to the owner with the bio of your company, who you are, what you've been doing, we own this, we own that, it kind of makes a big difference, right? When an owner feels like, oh, look, this looks like a real company. They look like real buyers. And you could even, like, reference a few properties like similar to this or in the neighborhood that you've recently closed, right? If you have what to show for, they're going to feel comfortable. Hey, like, yeah, I just want to work with this guy. Even though the other one offered whatever it is, $100,000 more, they'll feel comfortable. Somehow I trust that this company is really going to close this and close it on time and whatever, without any nonsense or concessions.
Yeah, that's a big point too. Basically a credibility packet. You're saying,
exactly.
I know a lot of guys with single families will bring a credibility packet. I never thought to send one through, like, through brokers too, because a lot of people fear, it's like, you give them an offer, they accept it, it's a top offer, 30 days or whatever goes by and you do your due diligence and you back out, then they're stuck with the property again and it's on the market and it just sits. Versus if they know, even if you're a little teeny bit under the other guy, they know there's a 100% chance you're closing.
Exactly. Yeah. I actually had an interesting story recently where there was a property that was listed for, let's just say it was listed for $1.5 million. My offer was to buy that one for a little under $1 million. And I didn't want to upset the seller because, like, they're going to be like, you're crazy. Like, it's on the market 1.5. Why in the world are you thinking that we're selling this for under $1 million? But I had just recently closed very similar properties to that for the price that I was offering. I closed one for 900. I closed one for 875. So what I did is I sent through the broker. I kind of put together a beautiful package and, like, showcasing, look, this one is a similar property to the one you're trying to sell. I closed this one and I kind of proved it. I sent them a copy of the contract, of the closing statement. I'm the one that closed this one. I'm the one that closed that one. And they were like, oh, wow. Because, like, we really based our listing price based off the listing price that the two that you actually closed on. Basically, the other two, they were also listed for originally for the same 1.5. But obviously, it was overpriced and it didn't end up closing for that price. I ended up closing it for way less than that. But by just supporting it, instead of just putting in an offer for 900 and getting the seller upset, I kind of put in an offer for 900 and backed it up. They're like, oh, wow, okay, come to think of it. And of course, they ended up winning the deal.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense too, because if you think about it from the seller side, like, all they see is the number.
Exactly.
Unless you give them additional information.
Exactly.
Because they just hear from their broker, and their broker only hears what he hears from
exactly.
your broker.
Exactly. But then I find, just going back to what we discussed before, relationships with brokers, I find it's very important to just be clear with them what it is exactly that you're looking for. What is it that you're looking to buy? That's just how, like, the few brokers that I work with, because they know what this is what he's looking for, they just keep on sending the deals to me whenever it comes on the market, because, like, they know exactly what it is that I'm looking for. Whereas, like, if I just be all over the place, like, oh, maybe this, maybe that, maybe, decide what it is that you're looking for, what are you targeting, and brokers are just going to be clear and understand what it is that you're looking for and send you that kind of deal.
That's solid. So now, say someone's thinking about getting into commercial. What are some things that you know, it's like, boy, I wish I would have known this back then.
I guess I could say that, like, just the whole turnover process is not that easy and not that simple. Kind of when you look at it on paper, you could just present it beautifully. Okay, so the current is this, the projected is that. And for sure, yeah, no big deal. The market rents are $2,000. So, like, big deal. Well, what's the big deal? We're going to, of course, increase the rents. We're going to up the rents and we're going to be collecting $2,000. And then we'll be able to refinance and take the money out and buy the net. But how exactly are you doing that? If you have tenants that are paying now whatever half of that, what is your strategy? How exactly are you going about it? That's beautiful. Like, on paper, it really makes sense. And once you reach that and the tenants are going to be paying $2,000, beautiful, good for you. But you just need to have a kind of a system in place. You need to know how exactly you plan on reaching that goal and be ready, like, be realistic about how long it's going to take you to reach that. It takes time.
Yeah, almost be like a little more conservative on your numbers to give a little room for error.
Exactly,
like that.
Yeah. A little more than a little conservative.
Well, especially when, like, in single families, you have to be a little conservative. In the multis, it's way bigger numbers. So it's like a mistake in a single family might cost you like 10, 15 grand. Mistake in a multifamily, like a bigger thing, might be like 150 grand.
Yeah, but there are advantages to both, of course. Like, on the other hand, a single family, if you put up with the tenant, then you're in deep trouble, right? Because it's just that one tenant that's basically supporting everything. In a multifamily, if you're struggling with one tenant, you still have the other, whatever, 5, 10, 12, 15 that are paying. So yeah, like, it's a different game, just very different in every which way.
You guys self-manage, or do you have a property manager?
We manage everything in-house.
Are you involved in that part?
To some degree, yes. I'm not on the road. I'm not actually visiting tenants or doing anything like that myself. But of course, I'm like overseeing everything, and I'm involved to some level.
Yeah, and I guess at your level too, it makes a lot of sense, because to outsource that would be really expensive. Like, you can afford really good employees.
Yeah, that's one thing. And I find also, like, in order to really be successful at it and to really make money, again, you know, I'm sure people are happy with management companies and stuff like that, but I feel like if you manage it in-house, you just have a better grip on it and make sure that every dollar is accounted for.
Yeah, you know what? I was always a fan of having a property manager do it. And then just recently, I realized they don't care about your properties. I mean, some property managers do, but if you're doing it yourself, number one, your tenants are your customers. And so you treat them that way. But then also, your properties don't get neglected.
Right.
Unless, like if you hooked up with a bad property manager or something, they just didn't do walkthroughs or whatever. Like, you got a big expense and took all your profits just because you were trying to outsource and be easy.
It's a very hard, property management is a very hard business. And it's very easy for owners to always blame the property manager for this and for that. It's always the property manager's fault. But in reality, it really is hard, because really no one cares about your property as much as you do. Like, even the best property manager, like, they have a bunch of clients and, you know, they could just try their best, but it's very hard to really care as much as the owner would care himself.
It's a double-edged sword too, because if you only have like four properties, kind of hard, because it you can't afford to put somebody on
right.
it until you get to a certain level, unless you personally want to do it
right.
yourself.
Right. No, yeah, everyone just needs to know, like, it's not my strong point. Like, when it comes to maintenance and stuff like that, it just drives me crazy. I'm not very handy. I don't enjoy it. So I kind of like just backed out right away. Like, I'm not looking to be really involved in that part of things, simply because I'm not good at it.
Now that all makes sense. Hey, one last, well, actually maybe two last questions, but first one is, what's Clever Insights?
Ooh, I guess I could say that's kind of an initiative, because I feel like I'm very appreciative for all the people that helped me when I got started. I kind of want to give something back to people, for people looking to get started in the business right now, or people that are already in the business, but I'm sure like everyone could learn from other professionals in the business. So it's a kind of I feel like it's a beautiful way of providing some insightful tips and content for fellow investors. And in the same time, it's, I guess, what you could call a branding little something for our company also, like a little brand presence. And people get to like hear and know a little bit more about us, which is also beautiful.
Yeah, I like it. Now, so Clever Insights, from what I see about it, is basically you're finding leaders in the space and picking their brain, basically, and finding the tips and posting them out. It's on LinkedIn, right? Now, how would people, like, if people wanted to check it out, where do they go? What do they look up on LinkedIn?
They could look up my company's Clever Property Group LinkedIn business page, and it gets posted there every week on Tuesday. So every week we have a different guest featured.
Yeah, so everyone, we'll have the link in the show notes too. What's your top book you would recommend?
I don't know if I really have like something very original to share. And to read all the basic typical stuff that probably everyone on this show already mentioned, from The Richest Man and all the way to, not all the way, saying Next Door Neighbor, Rich Dad Poor Dad. More recently, I've been reading, actually I found him on this show also, Victor Menash, about raising capital. Yeah, what I would suggest is just like whatever you read, just try to really find yourself there. Like instead of just reading and just like real quick, like try to really adapt to it. See how does this apply to me? How do I take whatever, like whatever you're reading about, how could I take this idea, this concept and apply it to my own business or whatever it is that you're doing?
Yeah, that's good too. Cause I think there's a lot of people that are like, oh, I want to read 52 books this year or whatever, which is cool. Like it's setting goals. But yeah, spend the time. Don't just read them as fast as you can to get through them. Like actually take it in.
I like to read a lot about like just I like to understand personalities and people's way of thinking and doing things, which I guess also helps me in this business because like when I get on the phone with a potential seller, it's a lot about kind of having a good communication and a good understanding of the person's needs. So it's not only about reading books about real estate and financing and stuff like that. You could literally like learn to take everything that you read about and everything that you hear about and apply it to your business.
Sometimes it doesn't even, you'll learn it now and you can't even apply it for 10 years or something. It's like, just store that in your head for the opportunity.
Sure.
That's cool. All right, good. Hey, Steve, if you don't mind, tell everybody, what's your experience like working with motivated leads?
When did I get started? Not too long ago, just a few months ago. So far, I'm very, very, very satisfied with everything. First, from the quality of the leads, I already locked in, I believe, I really have to go back to my CRM and check, but I think I locked in two leads, like basically two leads that actually converted into contracts. What I appreciate a lot is also that, what is a call that you hosted just 2 weeks ago? Kind of a workshop, like...
The paper lead call. We just pull clients on the calls that...
Exactly, feedback. Yeah. So kind of, I'll explain. Brian hosted a beautiful Zoom meeting between a bunch of his clients where everyone was able to kind of share their experience and give suggestions how Brian could perfect things and make things even better, which is very beautiful because we also get to learn from each other, right? Just speaking to like-minded people and other people in the business always helps you. And one of the things that I think I actually saw that in your book, the idea of setting up a calendar link to bounce back as soon as someone fills out a form. So they like, this way they know like, hey, this is real. This company is on top of it. And like, but yeah, so many things that I've learned from just speaking to people on the meeting and hearing people's questions. So that was very helpful.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Yeah, we appreciate you. Hey, and everyone listening. Yeah, we're about out of time. Everyone listening, but thanks for listening. Get out there, crush it, close some deals. Hey, Steve, thanks for coming on, man. Real quick, what's the best way for people to reach out to you?
I guess you could put my LinkedIn link and maybe I'll give you also my general office email that you could post it on there.
What are your websites for both sides also?
My website is clevman.com. That's C-L-E-V-M-E-N. Easy way to remember it. It's a play on the word clever. That's really where Clever Insights comes from. Clevman, M-E-N. That's my website. So if anyone wants to visit or whatever, get in touch, you could get in touch with me through that website.
Good stuff. Hey, well, thanks for coming on, man. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Brian, for having me. Have a great rest of your day. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, you too. And everyone, thanks for listening, guys. Until next time, get out, crush it, close some deals. We'll see you guys.